We're coming now to a very important chapter, the resurrection of Lazarus. Its importance cannot be overstressed for one simple reason. It is a description of the inner experience that every person on earth is destined to go through. It makes no difference where you are in consciousness now. It makes no difference if you have accepted the divine will within yourself or not. It makes no difference how high you go or how low you go. The resurrection of Lazarus must take place in your consciousness. A very strange thing happens when you look at this particular experience. It almost explains by itself the reason that mankind has lost sight of the meanings of the Bible. And if we number ourselves among those who have caught some measure of truth in the Bible, we are definitely among the minority. You will look through the Gospel of Matthew, the Gospel of Mark, and the Gospel of Luke, and you will not find the resurrection of Lazarus. And when you begin to question that, to wonder why, you may come to the conclusion that they simply did not know it had happened. When it occurred, they were not at the level of awareness that could discern this inner experience. John could. That's why John was designated the heir apparent on earth to the Master. The one who was the witness of this supreme demonstration was John. And Peter, in dictating his experiences to Mark, simply did not tell him about the resurrection of Lazarus. Luke was unaware of it. Matthew, dictating to Levi, seems to have no awareness of it. And so there it appears alone in the Gospel of John. And that leads to a second question. Was it a visible event? If everybody was there and Lazarus came out of a tomb, how could they possibly leave it out of their Gospels? By what earthly purpose could they omit the resurrection of Lazarus and yet talk about the raising of a girl from a coma or the healing of a cripple or a blind man? Was this not the supreme demonstration? And does it not indicate that the supreme demonstration is not a visible one, but rather an inner transformation, not visible to human eyes, not even to the eyes of the disciples of Jesus Christ? For they had not yet reached the level of resurrection. The witness was John. When this first came to me, that this had to be an inner event, I couldn't accept it. I could believe it might be, but I couldn't accept it as a full-blown positive truth. I had to have evidence, too. And the evidence came degree by degree. And when you started looking for evidence that this was an inner event, that's when you began to perceive the evidence. So I went through many of the manuals, many of the encyclopedias, many of the great writers on the Bible. And you know, I couldn't find one who would mention that the resurrection of Lazarus was not in the three Gospels. Let alone discuss it, they wouldn't mention it. And as a result, the commentators on the Bible, bypassing this, have never really peeked under the inner meaning of it, because they have accepted it as the resurrection of a man called Lazarus, who stepped out of a tomb because Jesus Christ stood there and said, "Lazarus, come forth." That isn't what happened at all. In the outer world, it's very likely that Lazarus was sick and he recovered and that was it. And it didn't mean very much for that reason. On the inner planes of consciousness where John lived, the resurrection of Lazarus took place. And so he alone could put it in his Bible because he alone could discern the activity. He alone could bring us the meaning of Christ being born in the consciousness of an individual. And so when he wrote the Gospel of John, including the resurrection of Lazarus, as you begin to see these names come by, Martha, Mary, Bethany, Lazarus, Jews, you begin to see them more as symbols than as people. In the outer, yes, they appear as people to us, but in the inner, they are qualities. And the closer you look at these qualities, the more you realize that John has been able to give us a mystical code which connects the various phases of inner development that are necessary for each of us to go through the inner resurrection. He connects them up in such a superhuman way that we see the skill of a surgeon at work. Now then, let's try to remember that if, let's say, President Nixon were assassinated today, and let's say there were four papers in town, if 20 years from now we look back at these four papers, it would be amazing to find that one of them did not print that President Nixon had been assassinated. How in the world could they not print it? That's the purpose of being a newspaper. If you look back at the time of the Kennedy's assassination or the Luther King assassination, you'll find every paper had a record of it. And then if Lazarus came forth out of a tomb, witnessed by so many people, how could the Gospels not have a record of it? You see, it had to be an invisible event, and that's why there's no record of it except in John's Gospel. You will recall the Master keeps saying, "I am going to leave you, but my hour has not yet come. My hour has not yet come." What was he waiting for? You'll find he was waiting for the resurrection of Lazarus. That's the signal of his hour. The supreme demonstration of the non-reality of death is the beginning of the hour. Because immediately following this, and this is why John's Gospel is so important to us, immediately following the resurrection is the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, the higher consciousness. He had to wait for resurrection before proceeding into the higher consciousness, which leads to ascension. This is a key landmark in the spiritual journey, missed by most of the Christian world. It is really the beginning of the Christian mysteries. It is not only the revelation of the non-reality of death, it is exposing death as a counterfeit of a different kind of death, that there are two kinds of death. The one death in which you die but are not extinct and come back in another form, and the second death in which you die to death, in which you die to the false sense of self and are resurrected unto life while in the flesh. And this complete resurrection experience is not an after-death experience, going to another place. It's the other side of the coin of dying to the false sense of self. On the other side of the coin, as we die to the false sense of mortality, we are reborn to the true sense of self. And so simultaneously, dying to self and being born to self are taking place. He's teaching us the necessity of dying to self and showing us the depth of dying that is necessary to be born to self. And further, assuring us that this is the way. Now we have to follow this with the eye of spirit. We have to understand it, and if we don't, we have to do it again. We have to understand it so well that the impression is made upon us that our function on this earth is to die to death, and to die to the conditions that cause death, and to die to them while we are in the flesh, through an understanding of their nothingness, until we can feel the birth, the resurrection of living spirit as our own selfhood, until we can step out of the grave of false mortality. Now, if you think this was a visible event, even though it wasn't in the other three Gospels, you miss the point and you think Jesus raised Lazarus. When you know it's an invisible event, you realize that Lazarus is mankind. This is the resurrection of mankind, seen through the eye of the enlightened John. You already are going through this resurrection. As personal self dies away, as spiritual selfhood expresses itself where you stand in your activities, you are experiencing this resurrection. The culmination of this experience is the Lazarus experience. And it's all in the flesh. It's on this side of the veil. Resurrection never takes place after death. It takes place before death, and it is an invisible spiritual process in which the old man dies. Now remember, it's chapter 11, after the divine power on earth of the Spirit has been revealed in many ways, and directly preceding the triumphal entry into Jerusalem, where the greater works will be done. Without this step, there would be no triumphal entry into ascension, the new Jerusalem or higher consciousness. Now, a certain man was sick, named Lazarus, of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. This activity of wiping the feet of the master with her hair and anointing himself with ointment, this was an activity later in the Bible not at this point, but John wants us to know this is the Mary who later will do these things. And therefore his sister sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. Now let's catch the mystical code here. A certain man was sick, named Lazarus. We're going to find a very ingenious device worked here by Spirit. Lazarus is sick, and Lazarus is going to be buried before the Master comes. And so we'd have no way of knowing what's going on in the consciousness of the one called Lazarus. And that's why Mary and Martha remain above board, visible in this delineation. They are the consciousness of Lazarus. They are what's taking place in Lazarus for Lazarus to come forth. We trace his consciousness through Mary and Martha. That's the device used here by the Spirit. And so while Lazarus is interred, you're going to find a code about what Mary and Martha do, explaining what took place in Lazarus to enable him to reach this high development, and what is going to have to take place in him to bring him forth again. And of course, they're talking all the time about the Lazarus in you. For Lazarus in you is that state of development which is ready through purification to be Christed. When you reach the moment in which you're ready to be Christed, that is Lazarus. And that comes through the various mystical codes that John is going to carefully trace for us. He says that they were in Bethany. Bethany, you'll discover, is a state of consciousness through which your soul must travel. It is the city where the division of yourself is united into one. And that Bethany, at the moment, is pointed out to be the town of Mary and Martha. They are two. And they must be united into one in Bethany. That's where the union takes place. That's where Christ is born in Lazarus. That's where you present yourself in your uplifted consciousness of one to be Christed by the Spirit. And as you pass through Bethany, you're on your way to the higher consciousness called New Jerusalem. These are not places, they are symbols. This isn't just Bethany, it's the town of Mary and Martha, meaning this is the consciousness that Mary and Martha will come into. Now we're going to see why Mary and Martha are so different. It was that Mary, which it should say later, and that's what it means. Oh, there it is. It's in parentheses, and that means it's just a footnote to explain who this Mary is. It was that Mary which anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore his sisters sent unto him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom thou lovest is sick. Now they had to write to him. And this is a situation that occurs in our normal mortal experience. We may be disciples of the Christ, as Mary and Martha were, but in a moment of stress, we are separated from Christ. And this is why he was not there at the time. In this moment of tribulation, they were separated from Christ in their own consciousness. And so they had to fill this gap of space, this gap of time, with a letter. They had to write, and this is significant, of the separation between them. If Mary and if Martha were in the awareness of the presence of Christ, there would be no writing, and we would not understand the nature of the absence of Christ causing the sense of grief, the sense of doubt, the sense of worry, always in the absence of Christ in your consciousness, through some particular kind of tribulation, we overlook that which is the answer to our problem. Not a letter sent to Christ, the awareness of the presence of Christ where I stand. This would have been their solution. And we are being forewarned not to make the same error. It's all by way of symbolically showing us that the absence of Christ is the problem. The presence of Christ will be the solution. And all of this is what's taking place not only in Mary and Martha, but Lazarus has gone through these stages in order to be where he is. At that point of receiving the birth of Christ within himself. He has united Mary and Martha within his own consciousness, as we all must do. Therefore, after they had sent the letter, when Jesus heard that Lazarus, whom he loveth, was sick, that word love means he knows him. In spiritual terminology, when you love, you know that individual, you know his identity. And so they carefully phrased it to show that Jesus knew the identity of Lazarus. He whom you loveth. When you say, I love you, the spiritual knowledge that should accompany that is, I know who you are. I know your name. I know your identity. I know your spiritual selfhood. And that I love. This was the relationship between Christ Jesus and Christ Lazarus. Knowing the identity of the other. Now you'll see then that Lazarus is higher than the disciples. The 12 disciples represent qualities, human qualities. Lazarus has passed the human qualities. Lazarus is coming into spiritual rebirth. The disciples have not yet done that. And so in order to teach the disciples, there must be one who can advance beyond them, and there must be one who can witness that advance. And that's the value of Lazarus and John the Witness. All this is being done by Spirit for the purpose of enlightening all who are disciples of the Christ, all who in their humanhood are turning to the higher spiritual self. Jesus says, this sickness is not unto death, but that the glory of God, the Son of God, might be glorified thereby. Now these beautiful words, this sickness is not unto death, has many meanings for us. This is the revelation then. We know he's going to die as humans die. But it is not unto death. It is not going to be that kind of death which is extinction. It's not a permanent death. Then what kind of death is it? It's a death within a man. A death of a false sense of self, which outwardly appears, in this case, to be death. But it's dying to that which never was death. This is called righteous death. It's a new death, a second kind of death, and it's revealing that human death is a counterfeit. It's a counterfeit of the right kind of death. The right kind of death is one in which you die without dying. Death without dying is the true death, because it's rather a transformation of consciousness within. The old consciousness dies, that's all. The new consciousness lives and will come forth out of the tomb of the old consciousness. And this is a phase of preparation at a high level for the phase of ascension. Now, this point, if you could visualize yourself as Lazarus, you would be going through a death that is not dying. But the qualities of mind and body that you have known, the concepts you have experienced, the life you had lived, would be dying out of your consciousness to make way for a new kind of life, a new kind of consciousness. And this is what is called, this is not unto death. It only appears to be death, but it isn't. It's a changeover, a change of consciousness, but a complete change, not a patch. Not just a temporary emptying out. It's a complete and total changeover. And you're going to find it's even a changeover in body, in mind. It's the way to the soul and the soul universe. The sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God might be glorified thereby. In the death of the old consciousness, the Son of God is glorified. He had said so to the blind man when the disciples said, who has sinned, this man or his father or his parents? Neither. This is that the glory of God may be made manifest. And so here, the apparent dying is to make known the nature of the true life. For the glory of God. And so as Lazarus in you, the old man, the consciousness through which you have lived a mortal life up to a certain point, is finally put to rest, the Son of God in you is made manifest. But not before. You can't hold on to Lazarus and be a witness to the Son of God in you. There must be an inner dying of the old man for a birth of the new. You can't straddle the fence. And that's why it's such a total here. That's why he's put in a tomb. That's why he's buried. You see, up to now, all resurrections in the Bible have been, at least in the New Testament, he would raise a girl from a sleep who was in a coma, but she wasn't buried. She was in a bed. And then he'd get around to the boy in the coffin in the city of Nain. But he wasn't buried yet. He was on his way to be buried. He was in a coffin. They were resurrections, but not of one who had been buried. You see the degrees, the progressions of dying to the old self. This is the total death of the old self. That's why he's buried in the tomb. He's not just dead, he's dead and buried. And the old self must be dead and buried. You have no choice. If you make the choice, it's because you're not letting yourself move in the divine will, which says there is no choice, this is the way. The old self must be dead and buried for the new self to rise. Matter is dying that spirit may reveal itself as the only life. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. And when he had heard, therefore, that he was sick, he abode 2 days still in the same place where he was. There's a key word there, and if you have a Bible, or 5 Bibles, look at them. Look at them in the 6th verse of the 11th chapter of John. John 11, verse 6. And you may find that if it isn't the King James, it won't read exactly as this does. And the reason is because many of our translators, in order to simplify the Bible, change its grammar to make it conform to modern usage, have done inadvertently a very sad thing. Now, for example, here, he abode 2 days still in the same place. That's very bad grammar, I will admit that. And so if you look in your Bible, you may find that he remained in that city for 2 days. Or some other changing of the words. But you will very rarely find one Bible translator who uses the word still, because he's got to clean up the grammar of the Bible. And that's the key word that they cut out. He abode 2 days still in that city. It doesn't mean he remained in another city and for 2 days. It means that for two solid days he was still in communion with the Father. It's describing the state of his consciousness in which he remained in total communion with the Spirit of God within himself, with the Spirit of God within Lazarus. He was raising the dead. He was raising that which was not dead, but which seemed to be. On the inner plane of consciousness, Lazarus and Christ Jesus were one. He abode 2 days still. You look it up, 11:6, and you find the word still in most Bibles has been removed because the translator was totally unaware of its meaning. He would have called this what the grammarian calls redundant. If he remained there, why say he remained there still? He remained there. But the word still didn't refer to his physical immobility. It referred to his inner stillness. And you know, most of us, having read this, probably never saw the word still. It's quite a shock suddenly to see it there. I didn't know it was there. Still, still, still. Well, that's the message of the Bible. Be ye still and know that I am God. And here's Jesus Christ being still for 2 days after receiving this letter. It's going to become very significant as we move along here. Then after that, saith he to his disciples, let us go unto Judea again. After that 2 day stillness, Judea, why, he just came out of there. They try to stone him. Let us go unto Judea again. Yes, because going unto Judea again was now a symbol that when he was there before, the consciousness was in a state of two-ness. But now, after this long stillness, the consciousness in Judea was ready to yield to oneness. And so we can return to Judea now. While he is in this state of stillness, not only is Lazarus receiving the Christ impulse, but even Martha and Mary are receiving the Christ impulse. And those two are becoming one on the outer. Divine power is released in this 2 day stillness. This turning away from world thought. Breaking the link of world thought with the consciousness of Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Liberating them into Christ. Now, as you dwell with this, you'll discover this is a very important key to the healing consciousness. There's no visible connection between Lazarus and Jesus Christ and Martha and Mary. But in the stillness, they are all one. There's no space between them or time between them, and there's no corporeality. They're a spiritual one self. The seeds of the so-called resurrection have been sown in the stillness. His disciples said unto him, Master, the Jews of late sought to stone thee, and goest thou thither again? This is the consciousness of the disciples. They have a man called Jesus in their midst, whom they love, whom they respect, whom they try to emulate, but they do not know him. No matter what they have seen him accomplish up to now, they still have feared for his personal safety. How can he go back where they try to stone him? Won't they still be hostile? And Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world." Now the day has 12 hours. Later you've discovered that 12 is the symbol of total Christhood attained. In other words, 12 signifies I, Spirit of God. Self-completion in Christ, 12 hours. He had 12 disciples. These 12 would all be Christed. The human qualities would be divined, so that normal human love would become divine love. All human qualities would be absorbed into the higher divine, or they would die to be reborn in the divine. And I, Jesus Christ, am that divine. The 12 qualities of Jesus Christ are already I divine. And does the I walk in fear? Does Christ in you need protection? Only those who have not accepted Christ within. For I walk in the day. The day is the spirit. The night is the darkness of materiality. The day is the immortal self. The night is the mortal sense of self. And so we find Lazarus buried in a cave, out of the day, in the night, in the darkness, because darkness is dying that day may dawn. 12 symbolizes I, the complete self. And the complete self realized walks in fear of no man and no condition. Therefore, whoever has not accepted I, Christ, as identity, stumbles in the night. If any man walk in the day, he stumbleth not, because he seeth the light of this world. But if a man walk in the night, he stumbleth, because there is no light in him. He has not accepted that the Spirit of God is his name, identity, and substance. And so the light from within his own being cannot go before him to light the way, to maintain spiritual integrity, to sustain, feed, guide, direct, lead, and inspire. These things said he, and after that he saith unto them, "Our friend Lazarus sleepeth, but I go that I may awake him out of sleep." Now to the world, Lazarus was dead. But we're learning it's asleep. It's asleep because it's a suspension, a transitional experience. Then said his disciples, taking him very literally, "Lord, if he sleep, he shall do well." They think he's in a sense of physical rest. Now, it's not a physical sleep at all. It's a sleep to mortality. He had been asleep to divinity. Now he's sleeping to mortality that he may awaken to divinity. It's not a physical rest. It's a sleeping of the complete mortal sense, which will now awake in an immortal reality. And to clarify this, to point out that there's a difference in death as there is in sleep, howbeit, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought he had spoken of taking of rest in sleep. And then said Jesus unto them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Now he could have said to them Lazarus was dead first, but he first said Lazarus is asleep to show us that there's a different kind of sleep he's talking about. And so when he says Lazarus is dead, he means, yes, he's dead if you want to look at it from a human point of view, but I'm telling you, the I within is saying, this isn't death at all. It never has been and never will be. This is sleep. This is the death without dying that every man will learn. And I'm glad that for your sakes that I was not there, to the intent ye may believe. Nevertheless, let us go unto him. Now, when Jesus says, I'm glad that I was not there, the I that he means is, I'm glad that the Spirit of God, Christ, was not realized there. That is what makes this physical death, the absence of the awareness of I, Christ, present. Had I, Christ, been present, there would not have been the appearance of the physical death. It would have simply occurred as a visible thing. A man would simply be Christed within. He wouldn't have gone into a death, a languor, a sleep. And you and I, as we realize the Christ, we won't go into this death, this apparent sleep. But it had to be done that way to call attention to it. I'm glad it happened this way, said Jesus, because if I had been there, it wouldn't have. It was my absence that made him go into the sleep. And now, as we return there, I will be present and you will see the difference. And all of this is the journey within yourself. Because I present in you, there's going to be no Jesus Christ coming to you visibly, but rather the realization of I, Christ, in you awakens us from the sleep of mortality into the awareness of divinity. In the outer symbols of forms, there's distance and space and time. Within yourself is where it all takes place. Nevertheless, let us go unto them. Then said Thomas, which is called Didymus, unto his fellow disciples, let us also go that we may die with him. Now Thomas means that we may die with Jesus, not with Lazarus. He thinks that just as the stoning of Jesus was attempted before in Judea, it will be attempted again. And this time they'll get Jesus and he'll die. And being loyal, he says, let's go die with him. Now there's a significance there because Thomas stands for sense consciousness. What he sees, he believes. You see, sense consciousness must go and die too. You see the subtlety of what John is telling us, that the Thomas in you must go into Bethany and die there. Sense consciousness must die. The belief in the evidence of the senses must die. Every little detail with surgical skill is included here. Then when Jesus came, he found that he had lain in the grave 4 days already. And so we have the sisters who immediately sent a letter saying he's sick. Quickly thereafter he passed on. Jesus stayed in the stillness for 2 days, received the letter after 2 days of Lazarus' death, and now it was 4 days. Now let's see the two and two as a meaning there. The first 2 days was the sleeping or the dying to mortality of Lazarus. And then the waiting of 2 days, just as Lazarus in us must die to mortal self, Christ in us must be born. And so 2 days for dying and 2 days for borning. And this is the 4 days. The crucifixion within took 2 days. The crucifixion having reached its peak, now the resurrection within takes the other 2 days. There's a passing out of mortality and a releasing of immortality. And of course there was the old legend in the Hebrew religion that the angel of death carried a sword and there was gall on the end of it, and that by the end of the third night, in the beginning of the fourth day, the soul had passed out of the body. And so spirit was taking every detail into consideration. And here, although the legend had it that the soul had already passed out of the body, this was going to be shown to be untrue, that there never was a soul in the body to pass out of it. In fact, there never was a physical body there. There was only the Spirit of God present. The Christ is never fooled by the image of body. It is the image of body in Lazarus that is dying in the old consciousness. The new Lazarus will not be living in the body, and he will be conscious of that. He will appear as a body, but he will not be living in a body. Before he passed into the state of sleep, he was not living in a body either, but he didn't know it. He thought he was. And so you and I, going through this experience, will discover that first we think we're in a body, and as we go through the inner crucifixion of the old consciousness, we discover that there is no personal me. Never was. There's no personal body. And when we reach the state of total death to the personal me, and Christ is born, we come forth with the knowledge that I'm not in a body and never was, but now I have a spiritual body. The transition in consciousness reveals the spiritual body of the soul, where before the human mind had known only the material body, which never was there. Christ is now here. 4 days have elapsed. The arrival of Christ signifies that Mary and Martha are becoming aware within themselves of the presence. That the presence is drawing nigh unto the consciousness of Lazarus. The moment of Christing is close. This is still the inner experience that we are all going through in greater and lesser degrees. Now, we have no soul leaving a body. We have the knowledge that no body is there. All that is there is the invisible Christ, plus the sense consciousness which is dying, in which there was the illusion of body, the illusion of human life. And life cannot sustain that old body for one reason. It isn't in the body. The reason the body goes through the death is because there is no life in it. The body being counterfeit, the life that cannot sustain it is equally counterfeit. But there is present a real life. And only when the false is understood and died to, does the real life
come through. There is no life in form. There is no human life in Lazarus even before the sleep. And he's learning that as Christ comes closer to his consciousness. He's learning as he's in the tomb that I am not in a body of clay. I am not a physical form. I am not a human being. I am not a mortal self. I am going through the first resurrection on this earth since the teaching of Christ Jesus. I am learning that I am immortal self. I am the first fruits of the Christ teaching. I am entering my immortal self, which has ever been present, awaiting recognition. And it is done in a cave, in a tomb, because all Christ's birth takes place in a cave or manger or stable or tomb. The lower self is represented by the tomb, and the lower self must give way to the higher self. So the rebirth is in the cave, in the dark, as the old man dies and the new self is born. The light comes over the horizon of night, and it is day. Day within ourselves. Christ drawing near. And then the mind of us, to describe this inner experience, the mind of us in the outer rushes forth in the form of Martha. The mind rushes forth to greet the Christ, seeing it as a man. The mind cannot perceive the light, so it goes out into the external to greet Jesus. Martha represents the head, the human mind. Mary represents the heart. The head and the heart must be united as one. The faith of the mind is not sufficient. The faith of the heart is necessary. The understanding of the mind is not sufficient. The love of the heart must be kindled. And so Mary and Martha are playing these roles in the initiation of Lazarus, or in the initiation of you, in the initiation of mankind, showing that heart and head, understanding and heart, faith and love must become one. Out of this comes the expression of the divine will. When Lazarus steps out of the tomb, he will be in the divine will. There is nothing he will do after that that is not divine will expressing and sustaining itself. His human will is being released. The divine will is taking its place, and as divine will takes the place of your human will, you will discover yourself reborn of the Christ. It will not happen while human will remains. It must be completely dead. A total extinction of human will. It isn't enough for it to die. It must be buried.